Welcome to episode 118 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast, recorded live March 22, 2018. This is a show about Office 365, Azure, and the IT Pro and end user side of life, where we discuss a topic or recent news related to Office 365 or Azure and how it relates to you as an IT Pro. In this fun-filled episode, we discuss recent news, including Microsoft Defender ATP, Windows Virtual Desktop, and Microsoft Teams. It is another Friday, Scott.
It is a Friday.
A fine Friday for you in Denver and the end of your birthday week. You had a birthday this week.
Yes, a very merry birthday to me. To me. Yeah, so I was traveling for work this week. So spent my birthday traveling a couple time zones behind you. But, you know, the food out here is awesome. And I've been able to find some really good restaurants. Like, you know, for birthday dinner, I had a really good peanut butter burger.
Oh.
Pretty much carb loaded all week, so I'm full of french fries. I think I've gained like 10 pounds in 5 days. You know, I'm doing pretty good.
Wow, sounds like a good birthday week. Although I have to say, I have never had a peanut butter burger.
You've never had peanut butter on a hamburger?
No, I have had a fried egg on a burger. I've had my breakfast burgers, but I have never had peanut butter on a burger. Is this kind of like honey on pizza or better?
There's a little bit more nuance to it. Honey and pizza, they just go together, right? You know, you want those two things. Sometimes with a burger, you might want peanut butter with something maybe a little bit like sweeter along the way, and not necessarily jelly, right? We're not talking like open up your Concord grape jelly and just get a big sugar rush.
Yep.
But, you know, there's some really good like spiced jams and things out there. So think along those lines, right? Where maybe it's a jelly and not jelly just slathered on the burger. Maybe it's actually like mixed into the meat, so it gives it some taste. And then you get the peanut butter, you know, with kind of the sticky and a little bit of the salt that comes from that. Or peanut butter with a really good sharp cheddar. There's just ways to go through life. If you ever have the opportunity to have a peanut butter burger, and I don't recommend you just start out making them at home, you know, go find a restaurant that, that has a good variant or variation that you like and start there. But I'm a sucker for it. As soon as I see that they have a peanut butter burger on the menu, I'm in.
Do they have any here in Jacksonville? I've never seen one on a menu in Jacksonville.
I do not believe so. I usually run into them in places that are not Jacksonville.
All right. I will have to go find a peanut butter burger somewhere, sometime when I'm traveling.
I'll let you know. I'll keep my eye out like city to city and I'll make a point. I'll write you a list.
All right. Sounds good. So should we talk about some news like basketball and the NCAA tournament? Oh, no, sorry.
We could. I mean, that's another thing. I've been spending a lot of time in bars this week, and it's been on TV.
Yes, that's probably not our very important news for much of our audience. I don't know. We should do a survey. How many people that listen to the podcast and our Office 365 admins actually care about the basketball tournament?
I do not.
I do only because my family does.
I know basketball is a thing where the ball bounces on the ground and that's about where it stops for me.
My primary interest is my family does brackets every year and I just want bragging rights that I beat everybody without actually caring or paying any attention to it throughout the course of the entire year. So I do brackets just to try to achieve bragging rights over the rest of my family.
That's a reason.
Opsgility is disrupting cloud training as we know it with their on-demand platform, SkillMeUp. Their new design focuses on a user flow to better support role-based learning paths with these great new features. Real-time, hands-on labs are now included with each subscription to build your skills competence. Hundreds of cloud courses with more added daily to transform your skills for today's cloud-first careers. Role-based learning paths guide you through associated level courses in an easy-to-view layout and tracker. Microsoft Azure and Microsoft 365 certification prep courses and labs to support you leading up to exam day. Learn more and start your free 3-day trial at www.skillmeup.com. We can talk about actual news that is much more fun and interesting, in my opinion, and that is Office 365 and some Azure news. There was a whole bunch of stuff that dropped over the last week or so.
There's been a lot going on. There's a couple of conferences. MVP Summit was this week. So while the MVPs are going out and getting their taste for what is coming in the future, you know, near and maybe a little bit longer term, there were just other things going on. So we had Enterprise Connect, which had quite a few announcements around things like Teams. There was certainly the GA of a number of other services and just general service improvements kind of across the board in 365. There's some new Azure services that went into public preview. So, you know, a lot of stuff was just ready to go and get kicked out the door this week.
Before we do that, should we cover all the news that we know about out of the MVP summit and just have a moment of silence?
Absolutely. There we go.
Okay, that was all your MVP summit news.
Yeah.
Perfect. Now into the news we can actually talk about or know about. We actually have no idea what went on out there. It's like the secret gathering of the MVPs that everybody knows everybody's out there, but nobody knows anything they talk about.
I know they take pictures in front of signs.
Particularly the Microsoft sign in front of Building 92, I think. I think that's the one I saw like 50 times in my Facebook news feed over the last few days.
That is directly in front of the main visitor center at 92. There's actually the company store and things are right behind that as well. So if you've never been to that campus, it is a beautiful place. And it's a nice little area where that sign is.
Yeah, I've been there once. I would love to go back.
Let's do it.
The once I was out there, remember the Surface coffee table? That was still a thing when I was out there, and they had one in the visitor center that I played with.
Boy, we're dating ourselves now.
Yes, one for the history books. Okay, so I'm going to pick off my top news item. Maybe not my top. One that I found interesting, and then you can take a turn, because we have a whole bunch from here in our document. So Microsoft Defender. There was Windows Defender ATP. Now there's a Microsoft Defender ATP for Mac OS. So Microsoft is getting into expanding their suite of Defender products out to all OSs. Right now it's still in sort of a private preview. It's probably considered private preview. You have to go sign up. I actually signed up. I got the email that, hey, we're accepting a very small number of people to the preview to provide feedback, but you've been added to the list. This is interesting. It's essentially virus and threat protection now bundled into all of your Office 365, well, Microsoft 365 services for your Mac. So it'll take care of that threat protection, integrate with your cloud app security for reporting and monitoring all of those security events. You can configure it with Intune. I'm on the fence about this one. Like, I like the fact that Microsoft is trying to include everybody. I don't know how much confidence I have in Microsoft creating security software for Mac OS.
There's a couple of things that come into play here, right? One is there's kind of a couple schools of thought when it comes to AV in general on Macs.
Yep.
And there are lots of vendors that you end up having to do things certain ways just on the way Mac OS is structured. So when you think about maybe interacting programmatically with files or understanding like as a new file is written to disk or a new thing comes into memory, it's just different than Windows, right? Different technologies and kind of different approaches you have to take. So quite often there's a detrimental impact to running things like most AV clients on a Mac. And that's been my experience with them, both with commercial products and maybe do even like a free one like Clam AV or something like that. But once you start running antivirus software and to a certain degree some anti-malware software, it gets really heavy really fast. And it has a negative impact to the performance characteristics of your day-to-day usage of Mac OS. So there's a little bit to kind of get over there. So you'd have to play around with it. I don't have too many live Macs kicking around and can't say I've run into too many environments where I see a whole ton of them these days, just based on kind of customers I run into. But, you know, you'd have to see what the impact is there. But outside of the AV, the nicety that's going to come with that is having unified telemetry and being able to kind of tie some of that back into the dashboards that exist with the threat protection service. So kind of understanding your posture and your landscape and where you sit within your deployments and your clients that sit out there.
I agree. I'm in that same boat where I like the nicety of the reporting and that unified system, but I have yet to see how well it actually performs. I do have some antivirus software running on my Mac. Some of my clients kind of like me to have that for connecting to their VPN and stuff. That some of the commercial products I found have seemed to get pretty good. But again, this is Microsoft venturing into a space that they have never been before in terms of security, antivirus, file scanning, all of that on the Mac. And I know some of these other vendors that have been out there have been working on it, perfecting their products for quite a while. Microsoft's big, they have the resources, but the jury is still out until I can actually install it and run it and see how it works.
Hopefully get whitelisted, and at some point in the nearest future, you know, they can add you on there and you can play with it. Or you can find a really big Mac house that also uses Office 365 that has also signed up for that preview and go do some consulting with them.
Right? Yeah, exactly. That's my plan. So we'll include links to that in the show note. If you are a Big Mac shop and you want to sign up for this, we'll throw a link out there for the private preview sign up. There's a YouTube video, Microsoft Mechanics went over this, an article going over some of the details, so we can throw those in the show notes.
Yeah.
Mover is a cloud migration company that specializes in moving your company's files from file servers or cloud storage like Box, Dropbox, and Google into Office 365. Their patented technology makes Mover the fastest OneDrive file migrator in the world. Moving dozens of terabytes of data a day is a breeze. Use Mover's free, industry-leading migration guides, or ask for a managed migration and they'll take the lead. With Mover, all your data is secure and intact. Running completely behind the scenes, you don't lose time, money, or hair while you transfer. Scan, plan, migrate, report. Migrations that don't suck with Mover. Visit mover.io for more info. So, what other news? What news excited you this week, Scott?
I was pretty happy to see a new Azure service come into public preview. So, in the way back when, probably about, when was Ignite? About 6 months ago now?
6 months, yeah, back in September. September, October, November. Yeah, almost seven, I think. Anyways,
yeah,
six, seven. We're splitting hairs.
In the way back when, a long, long time ago, Microsoft talked about a new service that they were releasing for virtual desktops and doing VDI hosting in Azure using native Azure technologies. And they used to have something like that in the past in the form of remote app. Like we used to be able to run remote app services. And it was something they retired over time. And, you know, they said, hey, you can go to Citrix or maybe do some other type of VDI solution. But there was not a managed remote desktop system that was Azure native, Microsoft native, ready to go. So specifically thinking about things like remote desktop services and remote desktop session hosts, all those kinds of things. So they announced this thing called Windows Virtual Desktop at Ignite. That, you know, there was a lot of hype about it. And then they said, oh yeah, it's going to be a private preview. And it's been just knocking around on the back end in private preview, you know, and it's kind of like your Defender thing. Like, are they going to let me in? Or are they not going to let me in? I never had any of my subscriptions whitelisted for it. So, you know, it was not necessarily for mere mortals. This is a service that has dropped and is now available in public preview. So you can go out today and you can start provisioning Windows virtual desktops that are 100% hosted in Azure, both for connectivity through existing RDP technologies or also through straight HTML5 players or things like that. So if you are in that Mac environment and you maybe have a need to surface a program, I don't know, anything in Office, Word on a Mac is not quite 100% feature parity with Word on Windows. So maybe you want to surface up a Windows thing, or you have clients that just don't have or will never have those applications deployed on them. Now you have a way to go ahead and stand up entire desktop environments, both full desktop or kind of application based through remote app technologies, up in Azure in a native way. There's a bunch of caveats to just getting started with this service. So we're talking about hosting Windows servers or Windows clients in the cloud. So those clients need to be managed and the session hosts and everything. So you're going to need a domain that you can join to. And when I say a domain, I mean an Active Directory domain. So Active Directory Domain Services, ADDS. And then you're going to have Azure. So you're going to have Azure Active Directory or AAD. If you don't have a domain today, or you don't have maybe hybrid connectivity between your on-prem environment and Azure, you're going to need a place that you can domain join those servers to. So you are going to need a domain controller in the cloud, either a replica, or if you don't want to do a replica, there is another service called Azure Active Directory Domain Services, AADDS, not to be confused with ADDS, that you can extend your Azure Active Directory into a native managed Active Directory instance, which is full Active Directory, and you can do your domain join, all those kinds of things. So once you do all that and you have all your prereqs in place, then you can start creating all the other things that you need to do.
And one thing, I guess I didn't think about this, the other way you could get around that is do like a site-to-site VPN, or if you were big enough, you had ExpressRoute, so you could join to an on-prem domain controller. I guess that would also work. But kind of like you said, there's that requirement. You have to be able to join to a domain controller, not just Azure AD, to leverage this.
And site-to-site VPN, to be honest with you, like you get jitter on the line, things like that. If your VPN goes down and your only domain controller was on-prem, then all of a sudden, none of your actual workers in the pool can authenticate, and your users can't do anything. So you really, you have to break down, right? Like there's a reality that you have to have domain controllers in the cloud to make this stuff work. You're either going to do it in your own in a replica that you're going to manage, or you're going to do something like a managed domain service, like domain Azure Active Directory Domain Services.
That's just the first requirement. Then you get into the licensing. So it also, based on the article that came out today, you have to have one of the, I call them the three plans, E3, either Windows E3, so not Microsoft E3, but like a Windows E3 Enterprise, Windows E5, Microsoft E3, E5, or I think the A3. But you need to have one of those subscriptions that includes licensing for Windows Enterprise in order to leverage this. Obviously, the Azure subscription, and this isn't, I was hoping this was going to be a little bit more like spinning up a server or a VM in Azure. It would be a little bit more point click, nice and easy, simple to stand up a few of them. It is not. There's a bunch of articles to go through. You essentially have to prepare your own master VHD image that you upload to Azure. Like you said, create all those load balances, resource managers, host pools. There's a lot of configuration in Azure that goes into setting up your Azure subscription in order to be able to host these Windows virtual desktops. The good thing is you can use reserved instances for this. So it is still VMs. You can still do the reserved instance. If you have a bunch of them, you want to save a bunch of money, definitely look at the reserved instance. But it's not something that, for instance, someone like me, 1, 2, 3 people, I'm not going to go leverage the Windows virtual desktop in Azure for myself, for my Windows 10. I'm still going to stick with just spinning up DS3, DS4, one of those in Azure, running Windows 10, and go that route over this whole VDI option. This is really an enterprise VDI option, in my opinion.
Very, very much so. And I'm kind of glad you pointed that out. There's a couple of things that happen along the way here, though. So in your case, if you're running in a commercial like PAYGO Azure subscription, you're not allowed to do things like run Windows clients. So like I'm a Visual Studio subscriber, so I can run Windows 10 in Azure. Like it runs no problem. I can spin up a regular client desktop kind of thing. But I'm licensed to do that because I'm a Visual Studio subscriber. Regular, you know, PAYGO subscriptions, just because you can run it doesn't mean you're licensed to do it. So in your case, you know, you have to stand up Windows Server, you have to turn on maybe the desktop experience, and you're kind of faking it out, right? You're running a Windows Server OS, maybe as a client-ish experience when you really wanted a client. So one of the niceties of something like this service is you'll be able to actually go ahead and say, it is native Windows client. It doesn't have to be, so like one of your session hosts, like, yeah, that's a Windows server. The actual thing that's presented back, the client you connect to, it could be a Windows 10 client, or it could be a Windows 7 client. So one of the things they did as a part of this announcement is, I think like the day before they announced this one, they announced the official end of life of support of Windows 7 is coming in 2020. If you go into this technology and you start doing Windows virtual desktop in Azure, they'll give you support for Windows 7 through 2023. So if you're you know, a customer and you've been kicking around and you're still running Windows 7 and you're hot and heavy in it and you haven't even started thinking about Windows 10 yet, even having the extension of that timeline might be worth a lot of this operational overhead and the pain you'll feel in the beginning when you onboard to a managed service. But it's really slick the way they did it. Like if you've ever managed a bunch of kind of RDS deployments, you know, where we get into session brokers and session hosts and this thing over here and this thing over here, it's just a lot to take on. So yeah, there's still a lot of kit in the background, but if you look at the way it's set up in this case, like you're just provisioning everything with PowerShell. And then after that, it's really managed through and managed for you as a service by Microsoft. So there's definitely some potential niceties there if this is something that you've been doing manually to date. Like I said, if you're doing the hard way today, you are very glad to probably see a much easier way to do it and make it happen.
I agree. And thanks for mentioning the MSDN. I always forget about that too, because I have all my Windows 10 stuff because I have the MSDN license and the Visual Studio, whatever they're actually calling that now too. But yeah, for those customers that aren't doing that, this is definitely a nice way to do it as a service. And if you're leveraging Microsoft 365 already, you have a lot of the licensing in place for this already if you are using other VDI solutions. So it brings a nice, almost completeness. Going back to having everything managed in one place brings all of that together from that Microsoft 365 Azure suite of things.
Yeah, it's a little bit weird though, because we're going to start to cross the streams here. You know, you talk about like Microsoft 365 and having that E-whatever license, right? Like one of the threes, and go ahead and bring them in. That doesn't necessarily mean you have an Azure subscription. So there could certainly be another subscription you need to pick up. There's more billing, more invoicing. We're talking about running servers and having those servers or those clients beyond 24/7, 365, potentially. So one of your most expensive things in the cloud is compute. You'd still have to put in all the same planning and thought that you would in an on-prem environment as you load these things out and get them to where they need to be.
Yes. Hey, Scott, I've decided there are no more streams. We don't cross streams. There's just one monstrous river.
Excellent. You're getting ready to move to Denver, huh?
I am. The Colorado River. Yeah. Anyways, PowerShell is a fantastic tool for your daily tasks as an IT pro. Wouldn't it be great if you could take PowerShell to the next level? With ScriptRunner, you can manage and develop your scripts in a central place. Monitor all PowerShell activities. Securely delegate scripts to help desk users and others. ScriptRunner automatically creates a web interface with no additional coding. ScriptRunner is the leading all-in-one solution for PowerShell. Get more info and your free PowerShell poster at scriptrunner.com/en/poster. Other news. More news. So there was a bunch of team stuff that dropped this week too.
Just a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, some stuff that had already been announced. Again, going back to Ignite, one of the big ones that it got caught up, it was like number 5 in one of these blog posts where they have, I don't know, they have like 10 different announcements in here. But Secure Private Channels actually has, I don't know if it's more officially been announced. I know they were already talking about it at Ignite last year. They must have run into a bunch of issues with it, which frankly doesn't surprise me. The way teams are implemented and layered on top of a groups, I'm still curious to see how these secure private channels work within Office 365 groups. But that is the thing in this announcement later this year. So very vague timeframe for when you're going to get private channels. But it is coming.
It's kind of one of the more popular user voice items for teams out there is the one that talks about this need for private channels and, you know, having some type of an implementation where you can go ahead and make that happen. Like the reality is competitor products have it. And it's just something that, you know, if you think about the natural way we do business together, managing around it is starting to become a real pain, yep. Especially as teams is, I'm going to say forced down our throats, right? For lack of a better term.
It is.
We're just being forced into it by adopting this SaaS platform, which we all agreed to do, right? So it is what it is. But hopefully, like you said, they can kind of hit it and get it to where it needs to be. I think it's interesting that we keep hearing about it in the context of, you know, yes, we're working on it. It's in private preview. And, you know, we're working with these select customers. And what's that going to look like? And how's it going to be framed up? But one of my concerns there is always, you know, when we work with select customers, And, you know, if you maybe you think back to past announcements as things of G8, they might bring a company like Avanade out on stage. And there's not many Avanades in the world that have 400,000 employees, right?
Exactly.
There's companies that have 5 people and 10 people. So as you design the solution, I think it's a really hard like product management thing to design a solution that's going to work for the 5-person shop and it's going to work for the 400,000-person shop. And that is a big challenge and a thing that they need to think about and overcome. I would almost want to see more about what's kicking around on the back end and maybe have everybody put their input on it now rather than just saying, hey, we need private channels, because that means very different things to different people, you know, depending on your business and your context and whatever that is for you.
Yeah. Well, and to go down a little bit of a rabbit hole, that whole make it work for 5 people versus make it work for 400,000 people is, I think that's a challenge all of the cloud competitors, cloud companies are facing. Because in my opinion, too, you look at somebody like a Google on the flip side, where I feel like they have done that really well for those 5, 10, 20, 25-person shops. But I feel like on their side, once you start getting up to the 10, 20, 30, 40,000, 400,000 people, they struggle with enterprise. And I think that's a challenge everybody's facing right now, is how do we build these products to scale from the 1-5-person shop that's going to use us up to trying to make this work for a 50,000-person enterprise.
Yeah, or at some point you kind of just face the music and understand where you sit in the ecosystem, and maybe some products aren't for you. It definitely drives some interesting decisions in the way maybe companies purchase their products and what that looks like. But, you know, for some of this stuff, can you be everything to everyone? I don't know. I think it's a very interesting challenge. Where I sit and kind of the types of companies I interact with, Office 365 can't be an everything for everyone solution. Right?
Yep.
There are parts that are certainly starting to feel like they are falling apart for enterprise because they're catering to consumers. And there are parts that feel like they're falling apart for consumers very hard. And I feel like that kind of inflection point, or that rationalization of what services we adopt, a lot of us are going to have some very hard decisions to make in kind of the near future about a lot of this.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. I've had conversations with clients where, as much as I want to tell them, you know what, go to Office 365, go do SharePoint, it's great, everybody should use it, I have literally sat in front of clients and said, no, what you guys want to do and how you guys want to use it, don't do SharePoint. Go get Dropbox or go get Box or one of those, because the reality is how they're going to work and how they want to work and what their end goals are don't align with what SharePoint is good at. But anyways, that's going down a whole nother rabbit hole.
That's a big one.
Yes, I am just going to stop right there and move back into some of the team announcements. So there were some fun announcements in here. One fun one, one interesting one, but around cameras and some of the things they're doing with video and cameras and Teams. Another one coming later this year is the ability to customize your background. So you know that picture you took of the front of the Microsoft building with the Microsoft sign, Scott? You can now set that as your background in Teams. So instead of just having your head sitting there with a background blur, now you can completely replace your background and appear to be somewhere else.
It's just what I've always wanted. I mean, how did they know that that was the one thing, right? Again, we're back to consumer enterprise features.
Yes.
Where did I want to sit and what was really wrong with the existing blur that exists today? You've got a bigger problem in just getting people to use their cameras in the first place, not letting them have, you know, their picture from vacation in Hawaii in the background.
Yeah. Well, now just go take like a picture of your coworker's desk, like you're sitting at it, and then put it as your background. And then everybody can show up appearing to sit in the exact same office.
That's what you want to do. You really just want to screw with your coworkers and start really poking and seeing how far you can drive them before they go over the edge.
Exactly.
You know, this is an office space. We don't want somebody to go in the basement and burn the building down and just to get their stapler back. Like, let's not encourage that kind of behavior.
I had a brother. I learned how to poke the bear, push buttons, all of that really well. And there's still some of that lives on today. Anyways, a more useful one is the content cameras and intelligent capture. This one I'm going to have to, I don't know how I'm going to get a chance to play with it, but this is essentially add another camera to your conference rooms, your team room systems to capture content, like if you're writing on a whiteboard. So the demo video they show, and we'll link to this or in the show notes, is somebody writing on a whiteboard and a camera pointed at the whiteboard, and it actually like recognizes the person and kind of blurs them out, makes them transparent, and really highlights, enhances the writing on the whiteboard so that people that aren't sitting right in that conference room can see the whole whiteboard, because you can literally see the writing through the person.
Yeah. Yeah. It is super slick.
Yeah. It helps pop the colors, enhance the writing on the whiteboard. So you really do get a much better view of that whiteboard, because let's face it, that's always a problem. One of the biggest problems I see with web meetings is when you want to write on a whiteboard, a bunch of people are in one room, you're in a different location, is really being able to participate and see what's going on that whiteboard, that other media that's off to the side of everybody's talking heads.
Like you said, you might need an extra camera in your rooms, and realistically, that camera is probably going to be needs to be joined to the meeting. So really, we're talking, again, maybe back to more enterprises features where you already have that existing VTC setup. So like virtual teleconference, where maybe you have cameras in the room that can follow you around and see you when you go to that whiteboard and start doing drawings. So if anybody's maybe ever used like Office Lens and you take a picture of a whiteboard, right, and it can take the skew out and grab it, think like that, except it's doing it in real time with a person standing in front of it, and then you can see through this ghostly person. It's really freaky. When I mean, it's neat, you know. And if it works as good as it did when, you know, they show off in like the demoware video, then it'll be a really slick and powerful thing.
I agree. There were some other ones too: live captioning and subtitles coming now to meetings. So if you're doing a meeting and you want to do essentially live closed captioning, subtitles within your voice calls, all of that is also, the English preview is coming soon. What I think will be really cool is when they can not only do this with English, but like do live translation for closed captioning and really bring this around so it could be used across languages, translations, all of that. But this is definitely that first step of just doing that live voice to text and putting it in closed captions right within your Teams meeting.
It's good to see those other technologies come over from things like Stream, or, you know, you have that ability to broadcast a PowerPoint presentation and then have a lot of that functionality in there. So we're starting to see kind of the feature parity right across the platform. If I can make a presentation through Stream and record it and have it captured in real time, why not on this other platform as well?
Like I told you, one great big river.
It's a smorgasbord.
There is a bunch of other ones. We'll put some of these links in the show notes to stuff around DLP, data, control of your data, live events. There's a whole bunch of stuff. We could probably sit here and talk for like 2 or 3 hours. We probably shouldn't. We're going to bore our listeners.
I'll make sure that, like you said, we include the link at least to the Roundup article. So a lot of this was announced at Enterprise Connect. And, you know, go in the show notes, look for the Roundup article, and it'll be a big, long thing that'll take you a while to read, but it has links to everything that they talked about within there.
Maybe we'll have to do another news episode next week when you're back from your exploratory meanderings in Denver.
Something like that.
Or just teaching classes in a classroom all week and walking uphill both ways in the cold, in the snow, barefoot in Denver because, well, it's cold in Florida too. Anyways, we should probably wrap up. I'm rambling.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks for the time.
All right. That. Thanks, Scott. Enjoy the rest of your day, and we'll talk to you again later.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening, and have a great day.